This episode is brought to you by Windrose Recovery, a family of premier addiction treatment programs in southeastern Wisconsin. Privately owned, Windrose Recovery offers a full continuum of personalized care for those struggling with addiction, including the Manor for residential treatment, Midwest Detox for inpatient detoxification, and Windrose Counseling for outpatient treatment. With highly personalized treatment focused on trauma, Dr. Chantel Thomas and her expert team offer an authentic experience, creating the kind of deep emotional change that's crucial for long-term recovery. If you or someone you love is struggling with addiction, call Windrose Recovery at 414-409-5300. You can learn more about Windrose Recovery by clicking the link in the show notes or by visiting windroserecovery.com. Thank you for listening to The Path to Authenticity. My name's Tom Gentry. I think of this show as the opposite of small talk. You'll hear real conversations with real people who know who they are. We talk about what makes them who they are, how they became who they are, and how we might become truer expressions of who we are.
I'm Gina Maffa, and this is The Path to Authenticity.
To Authenticity proudly supports the I Speak Media Foundation, advancing media literacy education through an evolving series of outreach programs within the communities that need it most. For more information, visit ispeakmedia.org. If this is your first time here, thanks for checking it out. If not, thanks for coming back. I'm Tom Gentry. This is The Path to Authenticity. Episode 114 for March 16th, 2021. On this day in 1621, colonists in Plymouth, Massachusetts met a Native American for the first time. In 1751, James Madison was born. On this day in 1850, Nathaniel Hawthorne published The Scarlet Letter. And in 1985, Terry Anderson, an Associated Press reporter, was taken hostage in Beirut. So, this is the first of two episodes with a therapist named Gina Maffa, who is in private practice in Manhattan. You can learn more about Gina on the podcast blog. Check out 20 Questions for Gina Maffa. And also, you can find a click in the show notes where I created that questionnaire, a version of it for listeners. So if you'd like to take part in that and maybe have that published on the blog, give us an opportunity to learn more about you, I'd love that. Also in the show notes, there is a link to the audience survey. If you don't mind, please take the time to fill that out. And if you are on Instagram, you can find the podcast there. I do some lives here and there, and would just love to engage with you there. And Instagram is where I met Gina. I think I must have, I don't know if she commented on a friend's post or something like that, but I found her and was just really a fan of the things that I was seeing on her feed. So I tracked her down and got her on the podcast. Now, back in episode 16, I had a conversation with my therapist. She's a woman named Dr. Donna Marks. It's the first of two episodes I did with her. But, and I kind of talk about being in therapy, how I came to find her as a therapist, what I appreciate about her. And I'm someone, I know a lot of therapists. I have a lot of colleagues who are therapists. I'm very open to individual therapy. I feel like it's a very worthwhile endeavor. And I look at it like, I'll take all the help I can get. And I'm also pretty introspective, if you haven't picked up on that already. But when I started to see Donna, I went a span of about 3 years where I was just kind of keeping my eye out for the right therapist. I wanted to find someone who I knew would hear me, who I knew would see me and affirm me and not try to tell me there was something wrong with me and believe in me and all that stuff. You know, specifically about relationship stuff. I felt like, you know, I wanted somebody who would get me and what I was going through and what I had to say. And I just knew Donna was capable of that. I knew she would help me. I knew she would affirm me. So the reason I mention that is because, you know, I feel the same way about Gina. And the hardest thing about, I believe the most important aspect of individual therapy is the therapeutic relationship. You know, if you're not comfortable with someone, you're not going to talk to them about the hardest things that you have to talk about. And those are the things we need to talk about. And I just found Gina to be very warm and sincere and sweet and supportive and engaging. And I just really, really appreciate her and am thankful that she shared so much time with me. Again, this is going to be the first of two episodes. And I think everything that I just said about her definitely comes across in this conversation, these two episodes. So, she is absolutely my people, and you're going to love her. Gina Maffa.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for having me. How are you?
I'm doing okay. You know, it's as we do this, it's Friday afternoon and, you know, kind of crammed in all the like work I needed to get done so that I'd be finished with my Friday before I got on the phone with you. I was able to accomplish that. So here we are. So now I can just focus completely on you.
That is what I dreamed of.
So
I appreciate it.
Well, so I found you on Instagram, like a lot of guests, and I'm trying to recall how it was. I mean, there must be a hashtag that I follow that you use or something. I'm not sure. And I have a close friend who's a therapist here in Palm Beach County where I live who follows you, and maybe she reshared something that you shared, but you share a lot of really supportive messaging that I tend to agree with. And so I think You've been on a couple other podcasts relatively recently, and I listened to one of them not long ago and just kind of knew right away that I wanted to get you on here. So I appreciate you being so willing and friendly. It's been great.
Thank you for listening.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Why don't you tell everybody what you do?
I am a psychotherapist in private practice in New York City, in Manhattan, and I specialize mostly in grief and trauma, but also with younger people going through transitions and life challenges. Also, it's actually quite a time right now, especially with COVID, that it's brought so many more people to therapy right now. So sometimes what people come in with, they don't realize is going to open up a can of worms that helps them on a longer journey to healing. Other things that were actually kind of in the background all of this time. So it's been really a humbling and really wonderful journey this past year, especially.
So it's funny how being someone who has experienced individual therapy, you know, isn't it funny how we kind of have an idea of what we're going to go into a session and work on, and then it ends up going in a completely different direction? It happens a lot, right?
It does happen a lot. I think people hang on to things, experiences, feelings for a long period of time. And sometimes it will come up again and again, and they'll feel that sort of like stabbing pain to just go in and deal with that thing. But a lot like a doctor's office, right? When you go in, your symptom is not necessarily connected with the very, you know, thing you think it's going to be connected to. It could be connected to something much deeper. Mm-hmm. So I always say it's a little bit like caretaking detective work to go in there with somebody and say, okay, that's what you're presenting, but let's follow that breadcrumb trail and see really where it leads. Mm-hmm. And it's usually a pretty, eye-opening, and I want to call it a wondrous journey, but it doesn't always feel good for the people at the time. Eventually it does.
Well, you know, one of the things I believe about this stuff is, you know, I'm someone who is really intrigued by all this. So
I love it.
The idea of going deeper and learning more about myself and what makes me tick, I'm into it, but a lot of people just don't want any part of it, right?
I think people think that they're ticking time bombs sometimes, right? Like therapy could be a landmine. So it's really good for you. You know, I think you probably grew up in maybe a different way. Maybe feelings were a little bit more accepted in your household. I'm not sure exactly, but I'm making a little bit of a jump not knowing you. Yeah. But it does really depend a lot how feelings and expression of feelings is modeled for you growing up, and how much shame there is about your feelings and how you perceive those feelings to be, whether they seem weak to you or they make you feel like a failure, that kind of a thing. So
yeah. Well, if you don't know me, that's probably what you would think about me. But yeah, I grew up in a relatively dysfunctional home and a lot of alcoholism. I don't know, a lot of drinking, you know, the alcoholism I can't project onto anyone else, but, I ended up developing a drinking problem. So I got sober at 23.
Wow, good for you.
Yeah. And
that's hard work.
Yeah. But, you know, it pretty quickly became a life purpose, you know? So that's how I got into all this. It was, but I think I also realized that the drinking wasn't about alcohol. You know, I was avoiding something. And, you know, one of the things I was experiencing to some degree, even at that young age, was, you know, the grief of untapped potential. And, you know, I, what happened to me? Where's my life? You know, this isn't what I wanted. And so I kind of just swirled down, but yeah. And so I've these kinds of tools and all the stuff you're talking about. So by the time I became a dad, yeah, I have a 14-year-old son. I mean, those are the things that I taught him. I modeled for him talking about how I feel and letting him know that however, I'll never forget when he was a little kid at point. I can't remember. There was something I did to upset him and I apologized to him, and he might've been like three, and his mom's a therapist, so he gets it from both sides. But so I apologized to him for whatever it was. And he said, "I forgive you, but it's not okay."
Oh, there's wisdom right there.
Yeah,
as a wise child.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, we taught him that stuff. And and it's really, it served him well. You know, now he's going into high school. He's got self-esteem. You know, he's grounded in himself. He has confidence. And it's just, it makes me feel good to see that, you know.
I love that. You've lucked out with a good child, and you've lucked out with also, I wouldn't call it lucked out, but you've utilized your hard work into rewarding parenting, which is what we need more of.
Yeah.
We need more of you out in the world.
Well, and also I think with parenting specifically, humility. Because one of the things I've learned is, you know, a lot of healing is really about unlearning things, right?
It absolutely is.
It's about learning how we adapted to survive the environments we grow up in or, you know, developing in other ways. And, you know, kids are pretty wise. They, you know, they cry when it's appropriate to cry. You know, I mean, you know, not infants, but once, you know, I mean, when things are upsetting, they cry. And I think for me, that's like an important thing that, to me, if something really sad happens and I cry right then, that's pretty healthy.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the good things with kids too, is that they're always in the moment. They're always in the present.
Right.
Whether it's, you know, through celebration or wonder, you know, or just getting out the anger and the fears and all that, unless you're obviously taught and modeled that that's not okay and you won't be seen and it won't be accepted, or it will wind up, you know, with a violent or unsavory repercussion.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's kids' natural propensity. So that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And I think, in general, we don't know how to deal with emotions in this country. We really don't. And a lot of this is just about literacy, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So
it certainly is. Yeah.
So how did you end up becoming a therapist? Is this something you knew you wanted to do since you were a little girl, or?
Oh, God, no. I didn't really know much about therapy for a good portion of my life in general. I was sort of a very asleep child in that way. But I thought I was going to be a singer growing up. And music was my way of expressing my emotions. It was my creative outlet. You know, looking back now, it was my own therapy. You know, if my parents were sick, going through hospital treatments of any kind, you know, it was, that was my outlet, music, writing music, singing, performing on the steps of my elementary school, you know, charging people for that little concert. You know, it was really something. But, you know, through a crazy turn of events, I wound up as an international relations major in undergrad. And, you know, I was always really just obsessed with more, with, you know, the differences and the ways that we were similar with other countries and other cultures. And so I know this is a long-winded way of getting to therapy here, but But that's life, right? It's not linear. So, you know, basically how it all went was I was doing my senior thesis on international terrorism and its traumatic aftermath. And at the same time, we then had September 11th happen. And here I was in New York, you know, living through that period and really just astonished that something I was studying right then and there was coming to fruition. And I became really instantly enamored with the idea of PTSD in a way that was very modern and a way that America hadn't thought about it since the Vietnam War, when it was really just coined shortly after.
Right.
And so I knew that I wanted to do work in trauma. I just wasn't sure what that was going to look like. So I thought, you know, study abroad and all of that. And it really turned out that I kept coming back to human behavior and I kept coming back to trauma and how we deal with trauma in our lives after an event, what trauma looks like when it's not a single event, but a prolonged event like childhood neglect or abuse. And it kind of shaped my young adult life. And I wound up going into social work school with really a very pinpointed focus, knowing that I wanted to specialize in trauma. This was back in 2002. And I graduated undergrad and went to NYU social work school. And so I specialized in trauma really shortly after graduation in an international trauma studies program that NYU School of Medicine had established at the time, and now it's at Columbia. But I just knew, you know, that was sort of my thing. And I was really interested in, you know, asylum seekers and human trafficking and that kind of thing, kind of marrying my two loves, you know, international relations and trauma. And, you know, shortly after that, I wound up working with Holocaust survivors for a number of years and hearing their stories and really realizing a lot of it was so grief induced, this trauma, that I realized that, you know, grief is a response to trauma in some ways, right? In a lot of ways, but that grief is also a trauma in so many ways. And so I really started to focus more on those two things in my life and my practice and my community work. In addition to addictions work, which is also to me trauma and grief, you know, as you so well said earlier. And and so it's been a lot of grief and trauma, which I thought I knew a lot about until then I lost my own mother to cancer.
I'm sorry.
Just a couple of years ago, and thank you. And it really kind of took me on a whole new, well, I wouldn't call it a whole new, but a deeper level of understanding grief and the grief process and the physical process with grief and that kind of trauma in the body. And so that's kind of where I am in a lot of ways now. And in my practice, I'm so fortunate that people come to me and share these things, you know, and that it's not just talking about what's been left and what's left behind, but really the person, who the person was and how we keep them alive and how we honor the memories and how we carry people with us. And how we carry people in our bodies, you know, obviously spiritually, but you know, and so it's been, I mean, it's really, Tom, it's really beautiful work. It's so humbling. I'm just so grateful people allow me to witness.
Yeah.
And so, you know, 16 years later in my career, you know, here I am feeling like I learn every single day something new. How fortunate.
Yeah. And, you know, you are expressing a sentiment which I definitely feel in my, you know, work as a counselor, that it's really a privilege to be able to be with people at a place in their life when they're in such distress, such pain, and for them to come to you to, you know, just escort them through this process. of change of, you know, now's the moment when I'm going to change the course of my life, or, you know, in some cases, or, you know, redefine myself in some way, or heal, just heal. And, it's a gift to be able to do that. And, you know, I think, you know, working in addiction, you know, having been taught that, you know, you don't self-disclose unless there's a specific therapeutic purpose. Mm-hmm. But many times people who come from that place where they themselves suffered from an addiction and then they decide to do the work, you know, that's the tool that they have, and they probably over and, you know, and people often think of it as, well, do you, people will ask me, do you think you have to be in recovery to help people get into recovery? Is it really important that you have an addiction? But I think what, as I've kind of progressed in my career and gotten better at what I do, it's not about what I did. It's not about the habits I had or the stupid things I did or how I was treated or what it's about being in touch with that wound and being able to be in touch with that wound when there's someone hurting sitting across from you. So that you can empathize with them adequately.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because what I believe is, you know, all this is all love. That's what it is. That's what we do. We love people.
It's so true. Yeah. It's so true. It's so, thank you for saying that so beautifully. It really is true. You know, I think it's not, and I say this a lot, you know, it isn't the skills you have or the training that you have that absolutely helps. But in the end, it's going to be that unconditional regard that you have between yourself and the client. It's going to be that you wholeheartedly are in it, in the trenches with them, that you see them there, and that you have the strength, obviously, to have one foot in the trench and one foot out so that you can help pull them or have your hand out. But that it really is about being seen, being heard, and knowing that you're fully accepted in a way that you never have been in your life potentially. And that is love right there. And that really is, that is the focal point of our work.
Yeah. You touched on so much, really. And there's a beautiful Walt Whitman quote that I would butcher if I tried to say it now, but it talks about, you know, becoming the wounded person, like, that's the job, like to be, you know, to become the wounded person and be with them. Yeah. And I remember now what really caught my attention about you when you mentioned, singing, because you posted yourself singing. I think it might've been like a Casey Musgraves song.
Oh, that's right.
And
it's, I totally did that by mistake too.
What do you mean you did it? Did you put it on the wrong feed or something?
I did. I put it on my professional account instead of my personal account. And I had all of these comments and likes from people I didn't know. And I was like, that's really weird. I know I didn't accept these people I didn't know into my personal account, but I figured, you know what, let's just go with it. It was a moment that really, I felt compelled to do it and sing. And so I'm so happy you saw it. Hopefully it was bearable.
Of course it was. It was beautiful. And, you know, if you haven't listened to Casey Musgraves, do yourself a favor, listen to the song Rainbow. Yeah. And if it doesn't bring a tear to your eye, you have a cold heart. No, I mean, it's just, she, it has this angelic voice, and, you know, I'm a music lover and I don't love people covering other people's songs. So for me to like that, no, you crushed it. You really did. It was great.
I appreciate that so much. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I don't normally do something like that. So it was a moment where I gasped. had like a momentary panic attack. And then I was like, you know something, this is really good. I tell my clients to do things that scare them in this way. And, you know, vulnerability, sometimes we have to be vulnerable at all costs, you know, for our own growth. And so I was practicing what I preached in that moment, even by accident.
Well, you won me over that way because, well, what spoke to me was the courage.
I appreciate that so much. It really,
to go on a platform like that and to just sing like a bird at the top of your lungs, that takes a lot of courage. I think.
I appreciate that. No, you know what? It's music is something that for me, it connects me to something larger than myself. It is almost a direct channel to whatever God source there is for me. And so it isn't sometimes that I want to or I feel compelled, but it's really that I must. And that it's in that moment, it's a stronger push and pull technically to anything else that I could do in the moment, whether it was, you know, journaling or talking or taking a walk and reveling in nature, all of that. Sometimes it really is. I had to do it. And whatever the consequences would have been, you know, and this was, you know, obviously by accident on my professional account, but even on my personal, obviously it's filled with people who are kind and love me, thankfully. Right. But, you know, in that moment, you know, even just putting a camera phone on yourself, no matter who it's for, it's really daunting. So I know people do it all the time. I'm not great with doing reels because I actually am very shy, despite having a history of performing and all of the above. But it is, it's usually really, really scary for me to do something like that. So I appreciate you saying it was courageous. That was a long-winded way of thanking you.
No, it's okay. We have plenty of time. that won me over. And what you're talking about, I mean, I've gone through that process with this podcast, you know? I mean, it's funny because, you know, there were things I kind of hid behind before I actually launched it. Like I had this really esoteric name for it that, you know, would have taken like, I ended up changing it because I could see myself having to explain it to every single guest I ever had, you know, people getting tired of hearing it. And, you know, but it was, I was using someone else's name. I was using the name of a fictional character. And it was, well,
now we have to know who it is.
It was, I was calling it Billy Pilgrim's Progress.
Okay.
So if you know Billy Pilgrim, the Kurt Vonnegut character. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
So, you know, it was a play on words, those two pieces of literature and, you know, the way, just that novel and that character, I just thought it, you know, just the path of life. That's what it meant to me. And you know, I had a blog by that name for a while. And, but as I started to do this and really get serious about it, I actually changed the name to The Path to Authenticity a couple weeks before I launched it. I mean, it was really close.
Wow. And,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, but the other thing is just to, you know, like I have told my life story lots and lots and lots of times in rooms full of people, sometimes hundreds of people, but to put it out in cyberspace is, you know, it was a plunge to do that. And, so yeah, it was jumping in with both feet. And I will also say I had a really great therapist who I was working with through the whole thing, you know, in the interest of me being my truest self, you know?
Yeah.
And just cheering me on. So anyway.
I love that.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the alternative? Hiding away? hiding the gifts away, hiding the truth away, hiding the authenticity away.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then, when you talked about the singing and how you must at times, I experience that writing at certain times.
Oh, I love that.
And, you know, not all the time, but usually in the morning, there are times when I, you know, I have a thought and it just hits me and I know I have to sit and write it until it's done.
I love it. Will you come over to my house and do that for me? I'm trying to write, and you know, I have a lot of self-talk going, so I appreciate when people have the things just channeled to them and they must sit down and write it.
Well,
I appreciate that about you.
I wish I could just make it happen, because I would write a lot more if I did. But lately it's been, you know, really having, sometimes it's really work.
Yeah.
Sometimes I really have to force myself. And if I wait for those moments, you know, I'm not, you know, it's not going to happen if I just wait all the time. And, you know, sometimes I think it helps a lot if you're familiar with Julia Cameron's work, the morning pages.
I was just going to tell you that.
Yeah.
It's so funny you say that. I just started them again this morning.
Okay.
I have the book right in front of me.
Wow, the artist
just
way.
To yeah, it's so funny you mentioned that, because I was gonna say, you know, to cure my own blockages in writing, I've forced myself now to sit down, you know, with my morning tea and do some morning pages, you know. And I know she has sort of like a 3-page expectation. Today I did 6, so I was like winning.
Yeah,
you know, like in this moment, you know. But sometimes it really is about forcing yourself. And sometimes it's about creating the space to do it.
Yeah.
And seeing what comes.
Yeah.
A lot of times we're not doing that.
Yeah. No, I've honoring your space. Like, one of the things I've worked on in the last year is really creating a space to write in. And even more recently, creating a space to do this in. And it really does make a difference. It does for me. You know, so yeah, no, that's great. I'm glad you're doing that. And, when do you write? Is there a time of day when you like to write?
Yeah, I think for me, if, you know, some days of the week I have really early starts with my therapy sessions. But Fridays I have the morning. And so some days I'm trying to fit it in before bed, before I start to read. But I'm really happiest when I'm starting in the morning with my cup of tea.
Mm.
So far this week, I got to do it Monday and Friday in the mornings, although I just started the morning pages. But Monday was just a bonus pre-morning page.
Yeah.
But for me, the morning would be really good, because I'm coming off of, I feel like there's a lot more space in the morning. The day hasn't caught up with me, you know, scheduling challenges haven't come up. People haven't needed to change their time around yet urgently, or,
right.
You know, I haven't gotten annoyed with, you know, the kid who's running upstairs all morning long, you know, that kind of a thing. So I try to sit in that space if I can have a little bit of free time. So that's the hope.
Yeah. Mornings for me too. I think part of it is the inner critic is a little quieter in the morning.
Mm.
You know, there's that.
That's so true.
Yeah.
That is true.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes, you know, it depends on the weather too. You know, if I wake up and it's pouring rain like it was this morning here in New York, then it's a really good time to write for me.
Mm.
I'm personally more inspired by weather. I don't think I could live in Palm Beach County. It's too, there's too much sun.
Wow.
You know, I really do love the rain. I think I find a lot of creative inspiration when the days are gray. I don't know if it's a past life living in the UK or what, but, you know, I definitely feel like my moods can be swayed a little bit by the weather. And if I'm feeling really energized and happy, it's much harder for me to write about grief, which is what I'm actually writing about right now. So, you know, it's a different perspective. If the sun is shining, the birds are singing, and I'm, you know, whistling about the morning.
Yes.
Then it would be.
I can see where sunshine would be challenging in those moments if you're trying to write about grief. Definitely.
There is something about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So where are you from? New York originally?
I am. I'm from the Hudson Valley region of New York, but have lived in the city, you know, 20 years plus. And my family is, my family came here from Italy and situated in New York City. So my grandparents were here while I was growing up. And so it was, I'm a city girl at heart. Though I also love getting out into the mountains, and that's sort of my respite, my church, so to speak.
That's beautiful.
But yeah, so I've been here a long time. It's kind of dense, you know. It's definitely, New York City is a relationship. It's it tests you, it chews you up at times. You know, it definitely can be a hazing period sometimes, but then it swoops in with a dozen roses, and you know, you see just the right sunset on a building, and everything is just, I don't know, wistful, I suppose. You become wistful for the city life even when you're in it. So there is something inspiring about being here, even when it's like Gotham and very dense and dark.
You're very articulate. And, you know,
oh, thank you.
You're welcome. And one of the things that you just made me think about, because that was just, that stretch was just beautifully said, you know, it was very poetic, and the imagery, somebody, I don't know who said this. I wish I could remember, but I've referred to it a couple different times in this podcast that, you know, really all of us are writing all the time. All of us. You did, you wrote that on the spot and performed it, essentially what you just said. That's what I'm doing right now. Right?
You don't think of it that way, you know?
But it is. It's, I'm composing what I'm saying to you as I'm doing it. You know, and it's, so many of us have such a difficult relationship with writing. We put pressure on ourselves around it. You know, it's like, where if we're just talking, it's not that big a deal. Right?
It's so true. I think, and it also is the moment, right? You asked me something as I am looking out the window, watching the sunset over the Hudson River, you know, the sun catching the corner of a window, and it romanticizes the city. You know, the rooftops are filled with snow, and there's something that slows you down so that you can, you know, you almost can hear the heartbeat of the city, and there's something really beautiful. So in that moment, you know, you sort of inspired it by the question, because I was just looking, thinking, uh-oh, you know, I hope I answer his next question okay. But you asked me something that was so real, I had to be, you know, it's the path to authenticity,
yes,
right?
Yes,
I had to be authentic in that moment.
Yeah, I experienced this with every episode, especially in the beginning. I would record a little monologue to introduce somebody, and I'd think, God, that didn't sound like me. I have to do it over again, you know? But
so funny.
It is, yeah. But, you know, I can't show up here and be fake.
No, wait, you know? No, please.
It's not going to work. It's not going
to
work.
No. Well, your honesty and openness is an invitation to others to do the same, you know? And I think the more that people are able to show up for themselves and others, the more, you know, healing we're going to have. And the more healing we have, the more change there is. And so that's the hope, right? Person to community,
right?
To world.
Right.
So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. Well, one of the things I've learned, is, you know, when we tell the stories we're most ashamed of, if we have the courage to do that, I mean, we always have this fear that people are going to shun us, but the opposite usually happens. People respond to that honesty, and we touch their hearts. And, you know, that lesson I learned, you know, when going into rehab, you know, I was so, I was hurting so badly, and I had never really been honest about all the stuff I was doing, the severity of my drinking problem and, you know, pot smoking and other stupid stuff I was doing and how bad it had gotten. I never really got real about that. But I also knew I needed to. I was at that point afraid not to. And, you know, day one, it was a very peer-driven experience. And, you know, I remember there was a peer leader who, when I first moved onto the unit, introduced himself to me and said, "Hey, you know, we have a spot open tonight if you want to tell your story." And it you know, of course that feeling ran up and down my spine, like I'm afraid to, but I pushed myself and I did it. And I told them everything. And I was scared. You know, I was scared, and you know, there were a couple things. You know, the big one for me, I'll just say it, is, you know, the depth of my drinking was I drank Listerine. Like I was trying so hard to control it and to not drink, and then was so desperate to drink that was there. And, you know, I mean, it was a really ugly, shameful sort of thing. And, but to say that to a room full of guys who I had just met.
Yeah.
I mean, it was tough to get out, but, you know, it's like the room lit up and they responded with love and gratitude. And it clicked to me that, wow, this is not what I expected.
No, the power in that. Well, you know, it's like when we're honest and open, we give permission for other people to be honest and open.
Yeah.
And, you know, that safety there is everything.
Yeah.
I love talk about courage.
Yeah. Well, the other thing about that kind of vulnerability is, and, you know, and further along the path, you know, when it's not in that context, but like in intimate relationships, close relationships, one of the things I've learned is, you know, if the other person can't meet you there with your vulnerability, man, it doesn't go very well. Right.
Yep. Yeah.
Like there's a lot of times there's like an anger sort of reaction, you know? And to me, that's at this point, I learned that, wow, this isn't someone who I can trust with that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah. No, I think more and more we have to be very discerning on the people that we keep around us, the people that we choose to love and give our love to and receive from, is that it really does have to be a safe reciprocity of our souls, of our psyches, of all of the grit in between, all of the fears.
One of the things I wish that I would love to do is come up with another word for safe. Because, you know, the right just kind of weaponizes that and makes a mockery of that. And, you know, it's like the easiest term to use, but, you know, I think what it's really about is respect.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It is about respect. Mm-hmm. It is. I wish there was another word for safe. It does, but that word also, despite being almost weaponized, as you say, you know, which I can see actually, but it is the one thing people seek.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess it is respect, but it's also the ability to just take a deep breath and be held in every way. Mm-hmm. You know, even if just, you know, metaphorically speaking. And so I don't know, maybe that's the mission for 2021.
Yeah, well, part of it,
mental health term.
Yeah, well, part of it is also an absence of judgment.
Yeah.
Because that's really where the danger is, the lack of safety is in judgment or reactivity of some kind, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Which always boils down to fear.
Yeah.
You know, you're different and I don't understand it. You're different and you can take something from me.
Yeah.
You're different and you can change things that will scare me. You know, I could go on.
Yeah.
But it is.
Well,
so true.
It's amazing just how relevant that concept is in politics, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's
politics feels so different these days than it ever did before.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. I'm really hoping things are taking a positive turn. You know, one of the things in working with families around addiction, sometimes I find myself saying to them is sometimes it's got to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah, I say that a lot too. It's really kind of the same with trauma. And I think it does get worse before it gets better. I think it could be the same with politics now that we have.
Well, this was pretty bad. This beginning of the year, that was pretty bad.
I think it was terrifying. It was terrifying. And what was more terrifying was the right's reaction to it, which was, let's move on. You know, let's keep things going. You know, it's terrible, but you know, we can't blame Donald Trump for it. It's, you know, and it's kind of like, I don't know what's happening. You know, it's the QAnon conspiracy followers. It's the brainwashed right, you know, followers that it's confusing to me. And I think that unless we're all seeing the same reality, I don't see a way yet. Quite yet towards unity, at least.
Well,
and that goes towards the same reality on many levels anyway.
One of the things I've found myself, not that I want to wish away the present, but, you know, looking forward to the time when we can read about this period in history books and what it will say. And, you know, I think, personally, what I believe, and listen, I grew up in Indiana. My first involvement in politics was being a poll worker for the Republican Party of my county. Like I, you know, I mean, I just happened to know somebody who was on the election board, but you know, but still, like, and I grew up in a pretty conservative home. And I mean, Ronald Reagan was, I thought he was an awesome president as a kid. You know, I looked up to him and, I didn't really like Bill Clinton, who was like the first president of my adulthood. But, you know, being someone, you know, I have a journalism background. So I look at the world through that lens. And I've talked about this a few times on here about the first time seeing around 95, seeing Fox News with the banner Fair and Balanced. And I remember thinking to myself, if you got to say you're fair and balanced, you're not fair and balanced. And
exactly.
Yeah. Well, and so that happened after the media was deregulated. Mm. So, and there was a fairness doctrine where both sides had to be represented, that, you know, there was not as much room for editorialism as there is now in news.
Yeah.
And also, so when we gained the ability to buy telephones anywhere besides just from Ma Bell, I mean, that was, that's part of what changed. The Republicans deregulated the media. That's what they did. And then for the last 20 plus years, they've been attacking the media, which they deregulated, accusing the left of what they're doing on the right. So Donald Trump came after 20 plus years of indoctrination. It wouldn't have been possible without that. They created this. And then not to mention all the gerrymandering. Only reason a woman like Marjorie Taylor Greene would be elected to Congress is because they butchered up her district in a way where it was impossible for a Republican to lose.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Totally.
She is dumb. You know? And I don't mean that.
That's putting it nicely.
No, listening
to her. She's cruel.
She's cruel. And listening to her floor speech yesterday, you know, her half-assed apology, or which wasn't an apology.
Excuses.
And she just, what probably stood out to me as much as anything is, you know, really, like, she just doesn't sound smart. And she's a congresswoman.
Sarah Palin didn't sound smart either.
Well, I mean, it's not the only time it ever happened, but.
And I don't mean to say it because they're both women. There are plenty of men who don't sound smart. It just happens to be, you know, some of the Republicans choose, I don't know what they're choosing, but.
Well, it's all really, and, you know, I mean, they're so disingenuous about everything and cynical. And I feel like that party is ending. You know, I'm waiting for a group of Republicans to split off and start a real conservative party, which I think would be a good thing, you know,
I'm afraid it's going to be the opposite. When they jump off, they're going to start, you know, kind of like the party of Trump, where it's this extreme, disruptive, divisive, you know, I call it evil.
Yeah.
Just to keep it simple, but you know, it's.
I'm right there with you. I mean,
that's my fear, where like the Ted Cruz's of the world are going to come out in full swing, you know, where they are actually dumb, you know, but dangerous.
Right. Yeah. It is. How did our conversation turn so sad? It's kind of omnipresent, isn't it? Which to me,
very true.
This has been a sad 4 years for me.
Yeah. Likewise. Depressing. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mostly disappointment in, you know, my fellow man.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. People that you thought were good people, you know, are racists. You know, the people you thought were, you know, good people are misogynists. People, you know, begin making excuses for behavior that's criminal and predatory.
Right.
And you're just homophobic. You know, it's been astonishing to see the truth of some people in this world. And even worse, in this past election, when so many more people voted for him, knowing, you know, really, really having a full picture now of the destruction that this one human being and his cronies were able to do, you know, and at some point, to be honest with you, Tom, like it just made me physically ill, Like I could not watch the news for, you know, weeks on end at times when I was physically ill, or I would not be able to be a therapist the next day, you know, in addition to COVID happening and watching, you know, him parade around like a monkey in a circus. It was just horrifying, physically sickening. Yeah. And, you know, it still is, you know, it really still is. I'm just grateful I haven't had to see a tweet or hear his voice and listen to any lies.
Well, Twitter thing is such a gift, because I remember thinking so many times in this election cycle, even if he loses, he's not going to shut up. Like thank you, Twitter, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's the end of him. I think he's behind the scenes stirring things up for his own media company or media channel. But I think that at least it won't be something that I'm forced to see, and it won't have anything to do with, you know, shaping policy, or taking the rights away from most of our people.
Well, what keeps me sane is the conviction that the light will always outshine the darkness. Like the good will always. I mean, you know, he can't win. They can't win.
It was touch and go for a while, though. You have to admit.
I know. But also, like, being a guy from the Midwest.
Yeah.
Growing up in Middle America, like, none of this racism stuff surprises me. The only difference now is that people are more emboldened to express it. He has emboldened people to be overtly racist. And, and all this, you know, I mean, it isn't new, this rumbling of someday there's going to have to be a civil war or some kind of revolt or reckoning. I mean, that's, people have been saying that for decades.
Yeah.
And, and here we are. But I, you know, first of all, like, we went from having the greatest president, the smartest, classiest president, who was a man
of color. Whom I share a birthday with.
You do? Oh, wow.
I do. When we share a birthday, and we're both left-handed. August 4th.
August 4th. Okay, so, yeah, but that, he's such a good man.
Yeah.
But there was all these people who were like so dead set against him. I mean, it's so transparent that it's just they didn't want a black dude to be president. I mean, come on.
Well, they blamed his faith. You know, they were calling him, you know, or his supposed faith. You know, and that was Donald Trump back then.
Yeah, the birth certificate,
lies, the birther. Yeah, yeah, it was just, you know, and then people were listening to him then.
But, you know, Trump was a reaction to 8 years of a black president and a white America that didn't want one.
Yeah.
Right. And then now here we are, the pendulum has swung back in the other direction where we have a Secretary of the Interior who's a Native American. Mm. We just had couple days ago, the first openly gay cabinet secretary.
Yeah.
I mean, this is an administration about representation. It really is.
It is. I think it needed to be at this point.
Yeah.
I think that you needed to pick people up. I mean, talk about living politics, you know, every transgender person, every, you know, gay person, you know, every person of color, you know, every background that was so marginalized and picked apart and nearly tried to be, you know, destroyed again. It's like, you really had to, you really, there almost would be no coming back if that wasn't on the top, you know, the very top of the pile, you know, for people who have been so badly beaten and dehumanized by the former administration, you know. And admittedly, you know, I wasn't the biggest fan of Joe Biden, but I do have a lot of faith in his good heart and the good people that he was able to put around him, thankfully. So,
well, so, he wasn't God willing. My first choice. Yeah, he wasn't my, but I do believe that he was the right person at the right time. I do believe that, you know.
Yeah, my father was very, very pro Joe Biden, and he's like, he's going to come through. And I'm like, he's got the lowest rating out of all of them, Dad, you know, and yet here we are, you know, and he's like, my guy won. I wish I put a wager on it.
All right, there you go. Part one with Gina, which was a lot of fun. More to come next week. If you want to learn more about her in the meantime, at the blog on the website, you can find 20 questions for Gina Maffa. Also, check her out on Instagram, and she has a daily pep talk that she distributes via email and text message. There's a link in the show notes that'll take you there. It's good stuff. Good, short, little, supportive messages that come through first thing in the morning. And when I get them, I feel like she's talking directly to me. which is really cool. So anyway, man, it has been a week for me. I'm recording this on Saturday. It's coming out on Tuesday, the 17th. Yeah, no, the 16th. So, Thursday night, I had a guest over to my place, and I went to get set up in the living room with mics and all that stuff. I have the little sound booth that I built in a walk-in closet in my apartment. So this is a neighbor who's a scientist, and I had her come over. I actually, before I moved the equipment out of the sound booth into the living room, I recorded the intro to this episode, but obviously I didn't record this part yet, the outro. So I got that done, and then I went to hook everything up at about 6:30 when the woman was coming at 7, and the power source, the cord going into my little soundboard, was damaged irreversibly, and it wasn't getting any power, so I didn't have mics, which kind of sucked, but at least it wasn't someone who came here from somewhere else. She just lives a couple floors up, and I think we might even get it done this weekend. But anyway, this new power source just showed up like 20 minutes ago. And this is actually about the time that I'm finishing up the episode of late afternoon on Saturday for the coming Tuesday. So it came just in time, and getting her done, so I didn't have to have some kind of generic outro. So we got more Gina coming soon. So grateful to have met her and have had her on the show. She's been awesome and so supportive. Anyway, please subscribe, like, follow, whatever it is, at Amazon, Apple Podcasts, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Listen Notes, Overcast, Pandora, Podbay, Podcast Addict, Radio Public, Spotify, Stitcher, and I also post the episodes on YouTube. If you enjoy listening to the podcast, please take the time to leave a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, or if you're an Android user, on Podchaser, or wherever you listen, wherever you have the ability to leave a rating or review. I appreciate every little bit. It helps. Also, there's a link in the show notes to a brief audience survey. If you guys could fill that out, that'd be fantastic. If you know someone who would enjoy the show or a particular episode, please forward it to them. If you have questions or comments, you can call and leave a voicemail at 561-247-4757. Leave a message. Love to hear from you. Might even use it on the show. So this upcoming episode, I think with Gina, I'm going to have a nice little surprise at the beginning, unrelated to her, but I'm going to leave it at that. Hopefully I can do it for that episode, but I got something cool coming up, something new. So if you'd like early access to the newest episode, if you'd like to hear unedited interviews, you can support the show on Patreon. That's patreon.com/thepathtoauthenticity. Another thing I do for Patreon is I do a brief little episode, just kind of what's going on with me every Saturday afternoon, and upload it. Ranges from 10 to 20, 25 minutes at the most, usually around 15. And I usually do some kind of reading. Lately, I've been reading a lot of Alan Watts, and I read a chapter out of his book, Become What You Are, today. So that's available only to patrons. The other exclusive content that I released is, you know, as soon as I interviewed Gina, the sound for both episodes and everything I edited out, I uploaded that before it was edited to Patreon and only paying patrons have access to it. That said, you can become a patron right now for as little as $1 a month. Okay, enough with the sales pitch. But, you know, I'm trying to do this thing. I'm trying to have this be what I do and stop being a working stiff. I really love this, and I hope you guys are getting a lot out of it because I sure am. Not the least of which is to get to befriend people like Gina. So, want to thank the band Punk Rock Opera, whose music you hear throughout the show. Their songs are used with permission from the artist and under a Creative Commons license. Thank you to our sponsors, The Manor and Windrose Recovery. Special thank you to Wendy Chin at Equivox, who's been fantastic to me. And shout out to the iSpeak Media Foundation, who we're trying to support. You can visit the show at thepathtoauthenticity.com. Got all kinds of stuff on the website. Lots of the 20 questions with lots of the past guests and every recent guest. I have more and more of those to post, but, you know, it all takes time. And so I'm getting them there on the website a little bit at a time. Always doing more with the website. And, you know, a couple really cool players on there. You can listen to it while you're on the site. I have an index of the episodes and links to all the content divided by the specific guest. And I'm going to do that, you know, by topic pretty soon, too. I'm going to work on that. So lots of good stuff, man. Just did an interview yesterday. Myself was interviewed for a show called The Podcast Podcast, where it's someone who's like a podcast coach and trying to help people get them off the ground. And that went really well. She's going to share the sound with me. I'm going to release that as a supplemental episode soon. That should probably come over the weekend. And as soon as I get it, I'll upload it to Patreon. Anyway, it's Saturday night as I record this. I have a Saturday playlist on Spotify, link in the show notes. Sunday playlist as well. Trying to do more with that. When I hear a new musician that or someone who's new to me or a new song that I love, I usually share it on one or the other of those playlists. So, check it out. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, both at The Path to Authenticity. Thanks again to Gina Maffa. Thank you guys for listening. I really appreciate it. Be safe. Be nice. Thank you.
get a guitar player?
The Path to Authenticity is powered by Equivox. For digital marketing and web design services, visit equivox.com.